Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FoxBet. NFL Week 13 recap, a little look ahead to tonight's big game between the Vikings and Seahawks. A lot of things on the docket. Hopefully you, all of our loyal listeners, had a great Thanksgiving holiday with your friends, family, and loved ones. I am Todd Furman, joined, as always, by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider.
How goes it? Sound a little under the weather.
Fighting through a little bit of the flu bug. I'm not going to throw my niece that's only 9 months old under the bus, but I may have to, as being an incubator for disease. The flu ran through the entire house. Thought I was immune to it once I got back on native Las Vegas soil late last night. Much like the New England Patriots, except I didn't have my own airplane, ended up falling victim to it. So hopefully it's a 24-hour bug in and out of the system, allowing us to get back to the task at hand.
This season has been a battle in every direction.
There is nothing that comes easy, my friend, whether it's beating the market, whether it's picking your spots, everything has truly been a challenge in more ways than one. That's for damn sure.
It's a mental grind. Let's just put it that way. That's for sure. No doubt about it. I think sometimes you wish you were kind of on the other side treating these games as a hobby, but that's part of the battle if you want to do this professionally, the mental aspect of it and overcoming some things. And just when I thought we were getting hot there, we had won like five in a row, and then I was feeling pretty good about BYU. And obviously we can't divulge every reason we play some of these games. Our currency is winning the game, right? It's not the pat on the back alerting the world that a starting quarterback was going down. But you always want to put yourself in a good spot. So when you do, it sucks when it doesn't come to fruition. That's the sad part about it.
That is the nature of the business. It's why the best in the world only strive to hit 55%, because 45% of those failures, whether you lose by a half a point, you lose by one, or you lose by 35, all end up paying the exact same, and that answer is absolutely zilch. But we power through it, move forward. A lot of NFL left to go. 1 week of college football with the championship games. Of course, that podcast will come on Wednesday, and we'll have more details about the bowl podcast later this month. For those new to the Bet the Board landscape, not going to rain anybody's parade, but we're not going to be breaking down the Bahamas Bowl, the Camellia Independence Bowl, or whatever the hell else they got out there. We'll focus on the big boys. We'll come to you after Christmas and make sure we can line your pockets that way. But before we get to all that, Payne, obviously saw a full slate of games so far this week in the National Football League. Wanted to get your take on what really stood out as far as the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Where do you want to start? Let's go here, because I have no problem talking about when I have egg on my face. I know you, and this is kind of just how open and candid and honest we are. We played a teaser yesterday. I think you decided to go with the Colts, which was a fantastic teaser. Like, once they got to a dog, I decided to go with the Cardinals. And boy, oof.
Hey, I mean, now, hey, at least to your credit, you were put out of your misery a lot faster than I was. I went from thinking it was a dead nuts winner as Vinatieri lined up for a field goal to go up 20-17 to somehow giving up 14 points in the final 5+ minutes. But like we said, your teaser, my teaser paid the exact same.
Yeah, I just, you know, I know that's kind of where people want to go. But the reality is, like, you just want to place a good bet. And your bet was fantastic and mine wasn't very good. So, you know, certainly Jared Goff, kudos to him kind of for coming alive a little bit. And I think some of the sharpest guys thought that they would no-show here, right? Their season's all but over after getting mentally and physically beaten and kind of worn out on Monday Night Football by Baltimore. And it's why the game came off the key of three, right? And so a lot of professional money on the Cardinals there. But what's really interesting when I looked at this game, and it gave me some reservations, was the mismatch in the passing game. And my largest fear kind of came to fruition here, right? Like, you look at who the Rams had played and who Jared Goff had played seven passing defenses, or three passing defenses, all top seven in efficiency the last 3 weeks. And then suddenly you kind of drop down in your weight class, so to speak, and you face the 28th ranked Cardinals pass defense. And it became like this breath of fresh air. So I don't think Goff is like refound himself in the same like issues that he's had this entire time are suddenly gone. I don't buy that. I just think it was a good matchup. The scheme was there. The play calling was there. Everything was perfect in that direction. Because if you look, right, you're just going to look at the box score and be like, ah, Goff, 424 through the air. But if you look, 4.8 yards per pass in terms of air yards. So his intended target was less than 5 yards downfield in the air. And the completion percentage for Goff was just 1% better than expectation. So great Rams performance. Definitely needed to talk about it. I'm just not sure the Goff issues are suddenly fixed because of this.
We'll get a much better indication of how far the Rams have actually come. If one win does right the ship when they take on the Seattle Seahawks, they'll get the benefit of some extra time to prepare, the revenge angle working in their favor. And once again, the Rams season will be hanging in the balance on Sunday Night Football. As far as other things that really impressed you, Payne, I guess we have to give the Bills full marks. You've been one of Sean McDermott's biggest fans, and there was one team that was buttoned up on Thanksgiving and another team that looked like they were ill-equipped to do much of anything. I know when you look at the yardage, Dallas absolutely dominated, but Buffalo went out there, took the soul out of Dallas. Josh Allen continues to make big-time plays when you need him most, and it really has been a treat to watch a Buffalo team that's got a lot of unheralded players and to see Cole Beasley get a little bit of sweet revenge with his first career 100-yard game going back to Big D.
Yeah, I've raved about the coaching staff for a few seasons now, and the Bills are ascending at the right time, not just for this season, right, but the future, and how their things are being laid out and built organizationally, and then you just kind of look at the division and who's getting a little bit older. Everything has the right trajectory for Buffalo. For this game, I mean, you go on the road, right, and you get a win on a short week, especially as a touchdown dog, you're going to take it. Buffalo prepared well. They have these blue-collared guys, as you kind of alluded to there, that play so damn hard on every single play. But again, if you look at the yardage and you look at the Cowboys' offense and you say, hey, they're going to hang 460 yards here, you probably don't think Buffalo even has enough to cover, right? Josh Allen made his throws count. He was extremely efficient. He connected on 19 of 24 passes. He was accurate as hell, something that, you know, left a lot to be desired when he was drafted. That was kind of the one question mark he had. Completion percentage was 12% better than expectation in this game. And he breaks the will of defenses sometimes on these third downs when he's able to move the chains using his feet. And then you have that great trick play that's incorporated there into the fold on a short week from, you know, John Brown to Devin Singletary. And that's the difference in the game. That's it right there. You like think about this. It's a short week. Everyone's going to go vanilla. No, these guys are scheming a trick play that it was just perfectly executed. And so I know when we broke this game down, we said, hey, like Jason Garrett, is he going to like out scheme or be the better guy here on a short week? We thought no. And the answer was no. So kudos to Buffalo. Big game on deck this week that could have some playoff implications in terms of who's hosting throughout.
Well, you mentioned the big game that Buffalo has. Of course, they'll play host to the Baltimore Ravens, and the Ravens, for a lack of a better term, outlasted the 49ers yesterday. A game that was a lot higher scoring early despite the weather, and a game that really died in the second half with each team mustering just a field goal. I know the 49ers got to the window, but I think, Payne, honestly, I watched both those teams, was very impressed with the way they handled themselves. I do have some questions about Kyle Shanahan on 4th-and-1 when you're a power running team electing to throw in the elements late in the game. But again, John Harbaugh shows he has confidence in his offense, 4th-and-1 in his own territory with about 4.5 minutes to go, allows Lamar Jackson to run the football. And the Ravens continue to go out there and show that they can win games a multitude of ways, even if Lamar isn't able to throw the football.
This is not to go too far off to left field, but this is a good example of kind of what we've been seeing in the NFL this year. Another battle on this game, and the pros came up short in both directions, right? There was a disagreement on this total. And the guys who like the under, a lot of them went in the first half. The guys who like the over, most of them went in the second, you know, full game. So both ended up losing here. I think when you look at this in terms of how the game played out, there were advantages for both teams grounding and pounding, as we alluded to on Thursday. That was kind of the key factor for us in this game. Which team's going to be able to remain to stay balanced? Both of them were able to run early on. both teams, because they have great coaching staffs, made adjustments in the second half. The one thing that I did notice as the balls got a little bit slicker and Lamar ended up fumbling, the deception of the ground game wasn't quite there, right? Holding on to the ball the last possible second. You couldn't do that because the ball is just freaking slippery as hell. You had to be a little bit more deliberate in your execution. And credit to the 49ers, they adjusted defensively. Bosa and their ends started setting the edge a little bit better. But one thing is really interesting here, and you hate to be like the hot take guy, but you think about this for a second. You think about all the information that you do have, and I don't know how public it became, but on Thursday, Thanksgiving Day, right, when everyone wants to spend time with their family, Lamar Jackson's getting his guys to go out to the field because there's an absolute downpour, and he wants them to figure out, are we going to be using gloves for this game? Let's see how it looks when you go barehanded. Let's see how it looks if I use gloves here. They're testing this out Thursday on Thanksgiving in a downpour. Meanwhile, Jimmy G won't even go out and warm up in the rain. He's practicing in the tunnel. And so
I like Jimmy G's style, I'm not gonna lie.
So, you know, little things like that make you a little bit nervous in terms of the mental makeup sometimes of these players. And in a 3-point game, you're like, hey, would this have impacted anything? Now, I know the 49ers got the cover, and that's kind of all we care about and our listeners care about. But you just wonder when you see things like this, is that 6.5-minute drive at the end that seals the game, does it happen because of this added preparation, you know? And that's sometimes the difference between two teams that's good.
Well, Jimmy won't have to worry about the elements come Sunday. He'll just have to worry about a fervent fan base when they go on the road to take on the Saints in arguably one of the marquee games of NFL Week 14. With the good, though, pain, of course, comes the bad, and I think the most logical place to start would be right in your backyard, a team that we were high on coming into the season, thought with Dallas's loss against Buffalo would be our opportunity to seize advantage in the division. And I don't even know if egg is the right term to describe how poorly Philadelphia performed against the Miami Dolphins.
Ugly, right? And they get up 2 scores early, and then they go up again by 14, and you're thinking to yourself, hey, this game's dead and buried. They did nothing defensively. They kind of wilted in the weather, and it wasn't overly hot either. There's a nice breeze kicking up, but Ryan Fitzpatrick absolutely ruled the day. Devontae Parker continues to be fantastic. If you look at a lot of his numbers and metrics since about week 6, he's been one of the very best receivers in the NFL. It's a guy we've kind of pounded the table for over the years. Be like, man, is he wildly talented? It's just not showing up. Finally, he's healthy. He's repaying an organization that believed in him, that they felt, he thought that they were going to dump him, but they showed some faith and he's delivering for them. When you look at the Eagles, though, offensively, they're still struggling a little bit. I know you're going to look at 31 points and be like, hey, they're back. It just doesn't look right. There's something missing from the offense. I'm not quite sure what it was. But defensively, this was supposed to be a unit that was one of the best in the NFL. Just not the case here. And they had a real big opportunity. Just come away with a win, and you're going to find yourself at 6-6. You still got the big game coming up against Dallas. But if you're at least in a position where you're tied, the schedule, right? The reason all the professional bettors chose to go with the Eagles to win the division rather than Dallas was the home stretch and the schedule that they were going to play. Now you're back a game, and it makes that schedule not look as important. So I don't know what's going on with Philadelphia. This was a game that they absolutely had to have, and they were just dominated. It was a very poor defensive effort.
Never discount the power of Fitzmagic. When the Miami Dolphins go out there,
I'm so pissed about that, too. It's like, what are you doing? Tank. Lose these freaking games. There's no reason to win.
It's interesting because, I mean, we go back and forth. Obviously, you're not going to get the best available player there, which as a fan sits in your craw. But I think you have to give Brian Flores credit for being able to bust out that special teams play, try and create the culture, and go, you know what, we're going to try and get these guys on the same page. And to their credit, despite being talent deficient every single week, they've gone out there and showed arguably more fight than half the teams in the league.
Oh, no question, right? That is the other side of this. And as a fan and as a when you're thinking to yourself, when you're loaded with draft picks, you want the best possible pick. But you are right? He's building a culture. He's building a mindset. His guys are not quitting. They're fighting. They're battling. They're scrapping. And so you can see the culture kind of overtaking things right now. And it is a perfect example. But I think you can still create that a little bit and potentially not put these guys in the best position to exceed and win, right? We that there's kind of that balancing act. It's the unwritten rule. No one would want to talk about it, but it would be nice if you were battling and fighting and losing some of these games.
Two other games I wanted to touch on real quick and get your take. Kansas City goes out there and absolutely boat races Oakland. The Raiders lose by 31 points for the second straight week. I know the numbers tell a slightly different story, as Kansas City's offense, to my eye as I watch the game, lacks some of that big play potential. Now I know 40-mile-an-hour wind gusts for a team predicated on deep balls and speed against that Raiders secondary wasn't going to look like the greatest show on turf. But on the other side, they'll take on a New England team who is, I don't know the best adjective to use to describe their performance, underwhelming maybe, in their 28-22 loss to the Houston Texans.
So it's a really interesting game with how the Chiefs performed. Obviously, the scoreboard says an absolute blowout. You look at some of the yards per play metrics, and that wasn't necessarily the case. But the defense continues to be very good against the pass, and they continue to have Derek Carr's number. And that's really what swung this game, right? When you're up 21-0, when you have a big lead late, there really isn't this pressure to move the ball. But I kind of have been focusing on this for a few weeks now. And to your point, KC is really built right now in an interesting fashion that doesn't necessarily bode well for the playoffs. They're having issues running the ball, and obviously they've had issues stopping the run, right? They're a pass-first team. They're better defending the pass as well. And those are some things that you're starting to see right now unfold. And it's not going to show itself completely against a Raiders team that's unfolding right now like a cheap lawn chair. But as you start to, even this week, right, coming up against New England, are you going to be able to stop the run? Are you going to be able to run the ball? Are you going to be able to be multidimensional? I know Patrick Mahomes is Superman, but he's still not 100%. But yes, to your point, the weather did have an impact. Why the total opened 54 and closed 48.5. Books got a little, got middled on that. But yeah, you're not going to look ultra impressive offensively with whipping wins, being a pass first team, and having a commanding lead. There's really no emphasis on trying to balloon the score out, really, in my opinion.
No, they're going to need to be better when they go to Foxborough to take on what'll be a pissed off Patriots team. For sure, who looked anything but an offensive juggernaut against the Houston Texans. Deshaun Watson passed his test with flying colors. Relatively speaking, and for the first time in a while, I actually had good things to say about Bill O'Brien, but I think a lot of that might have been more of a reflection on the Patriots than anything else. Last but not least, ugly yet again, Payne. The Colts are done in by their special teams, and we can say what we want. Yes, mathematically, they're alive, but for all intents and purposes, that probably was the final nail in our AFC South division ticket, knowing that Indianapolis has led opportunities to win on the road at Houston get away from them in a game where they had a chance to go up 20-17 with 5 minutes to go, snowballed out of control into a 31-17 defeat.
Dunzo, officially. That future's dead and buried. Was hoping for better, obviously. They feel so snake bitten to me, right? Like when the football gods come out and they like deliver you the retirement of Andrew Luck, you're like, okay, we're going to catch some breaks throughout the course of the season. And it's like, no, like T.Y. Hilton's going to go down. Marlon Mack's going to go down. Paris Campbell's going to go down. Eric Ebron's going to go down. Like it's just one injury after another that they just can't manage to overcome. When they got up 17-7, you're like, wow, This is a great performance. They're out scheming. They're out coaching the Titans. And then you just get these poor breaks. I don't know how many games Adam Vinatieri's cost these guys this season. I would say conservatively 4 games.
It's brutal because it obviously changes your play calling and everything you have to do when you get in a plus territory when you have no confidence in your kicker. And while his legacy speaks volume, somewhere along the way, you have to look at his productivity or lack thereof this season and make a decision that's going to put the Colts in the best chance to actually win football games.
Oh, no doubt about it. And I think the one thing that was quite telling, and I didn't watch a lot of this game, but the part that I did catch was the announcer was like, just look how he's hitting the ball. Like, it's not clean. Like, one's coming off his ankle. Like, it's not necessarily a head game thing, so to speak, right? It's not this mental thing where he's like pushing the ball or ball's coming off his ankle. Like he's not even hitting it clean anymore. You see him on like extra points that he is making. He's kind of like stabbing at the ball. I get that he's a legacy and it was tough to move on from, but despite all the injuries this season, they could have had about 4 more wins if he was as precise and as efficient as he's been throughout the course of his career.
All good things must come to an end, and I think Adam Vinatieri has met the end of his road. Let's see if he gets to finish out the season before the Colts elect to go in a different direction for next year.
What's going on with your boy Anthony Lynn there, playing for a tie?
I'm not quite sure, but that probably was the most Chargers way to lose a football game. I mean, being a fan of that team, and I know there's only about 8 of them out there, it has to be one of the most exhausting teams to root for. Playing for ties, just dumb decisions. I don't even know how to grasp or articulate what we saw transpire in the waning seconds against Denver and a rookie quarterback.
Oh, my God, man. I feel bad for Chargers fans. I feel bad for, as you alluded to, all eight of them. I don't know what he's doing. Playing for ties late, uber conservative. And you just think about some of the success they had moving the ball, kind of being more physical. And then just Derek Wolfe was out. He was injured. You had Vernon out before the game, right? So key cogs on the defensive line are out there and you can't get half an inch, right? We can't go for the win here. You had two timeouts. Like, it's just, it's so pathetic. And then the end game situation with the pass interference. I mean, hold the guys at the line of scrimmage, burn 5 seconds, and then turn it into a situation where it's a Hail Mary or a one play for a touchdown 60 yards away. Like, just terrible game theory. Everything's just really horrific right there with their coaching staff. I can't figure it out. So not that that was anything we were going to talk about, it, but just kind of dawned on me on how bad Anthony Lynn was in that situation and playing not to lose.
It's a team I've tossed to the scrap heap, and they play another team that should be on the scrap heap as well, the Jacksonville Jaguars this weekend. I may spend about 37 seconds handicapping that particular contest, trying to figure out what I'm going to get from those two teams.
That was the angle there on the Bucs. The Jacksonville Jaguars have just flat out
quit. Oh, they're a mess.
They've quit.
They look like a football team that would rather be doing anything but playing football yesterday.
If you ever want to do something interesting, just go look at A.J. Bouye's tape for the last 3 weeks. It's not the finest stuff.
Jalen Ramsey knew a little bit of what he was doing to try and get off of that boat before it officially hit rock bottom. And I'm sure we'll see a coaching change take place, as I think Doug Marrone has lost a lot of the guys and they'll figure out quarterback and everything else. But things not so rosy in Jacksonville makes that one special season feel like a mirage when they had a chance to get to the Super Bowl. Look at lines, Payne. We've seen some adjustments, some interesting moves here, and we can kind of run through these pretty quickly. I know we have Dr. Chow waiting in the wings to offer some injury guidance and some fantasy advice. Current line, the Ravens 5.5-point favorite on the road at Buffalo right now at Fox Bet. Your look-ahead number here, though, had the Ravens a full touchdown chalk.
Buffalo's red hot, obviously, right now, and I think there's this perception of them. They're better than people think, without question. And kind of the underlying element here is Buffalo's home field advantage does continue to increase as the season goes on, but I'm not sure the weather's going to impact Baltimore. And again, the question will remain here is, can Buffalo stop the run? And this is a different type of run, right? It's an exotic run. And the other thing is, you just have to wonder, like, at what point, and I know this isn't the fan perspective where people are going to think you're a little nuts, at what point does Baltimore have a little let up? Like, when do they just, like, take a breath? Big game after big game after big game. So this is certainly a tough one here. Intrigued to see what the weather will look like, because there's probably some advantages here for both offenses. But again, I want to kind of check the weather a little bit. And as we're speaking, Todd, this game leaking down, we're at like soft 5 right now.
Pretty crazy that you're seeing that kind of movement early in the week. Now, I know non-key numbers is one thing, but still, it is just Monday morning, and these things all tend to be on the move a lot earlier than ever before.
And 6 has certainly become more valuable as a secondary key number with the field goal pushback, or the extra point pushback, rather.
When we look at the Browns and Bengals, Cleveland, of course, gets off the schneid, get their first win of the season, crushing the New York Jets. The Browns, on a look-ahead number, were a 10.5-point favorite, but your current number on this game has the Browns an 8.5-point chalk at Fox Bet.
The in-state rivalry game here. and I think with Andy Dalton back, right, it's not just the performance of the offense being significantly better, but guys aren't stupid. They're in that locker room. They know who gives them the best chance to win. So we saw the defensive effort step up a notch as well. When you look at Cleveland, effectively, they just lost their Super Bowl. And you wonder internally if there is some strife, if there is some issues going on, is this a game they completely care about? They're basically dead and buried at this point. So that becomes the big question here. Can Freddie Kitchens get these guys motivated to come out basically a week after their season effectively ended against Cincinnati, who's likely going to look at this game as their Super Bowl, right? And now you could potentially look to go win another game, because both Washington and Miami did so as well. So you can go pick up your second win and not deter your draft stock in bringing Joe Burrow back to Ohio.
Going to be interesting to see what direction the Bengals go in. We clearly know that Ryan Finley is not the face of that organization going forward. Last but not least, as far as look ahead, this one has moved pretty considerably, and you can understand why when a team loses its last two games by a combined 62 points. Titans on a look ahead number were a pick'em on the road against Oakland. Right now, you're looking at the Titans all the way out to a full field goal favorite at Foxbet.
The offense has completely changed with Ryan Tannehill running it, and credit to him, it's a great story. The Dolphins basically just did not think he was the guy anymore. They wanted to change directions and start fresh, and he was willing to take a backup job, but he saw the future ahead and said, hey, I probably have a chance here if things go awry with Marcus Mariota to step in. And he's getting help from the ground game. Derrick Henry is turning it on as the season has come alive. But Ryan Tannehill's been fantastic. If you look right now, he's in the qualifying quarterback mix. He's played enough snaps and games. Right now, he is number one among all quarterbacks in the NFL, 10% better than expected completion percentage. That's number one in the NFL. So he's really revitalized the passing game. He looks 100% healthy right now. The ball is just flying out of his hands right now. Ton of zip. And maybe that's been helpful, right? Because he sat out the first month or so, and sometimes you have that fatigue factor with your arm. He looks like he is right now in full force and has really turned this this team around, giving them confidence as well. Also, a lot of halftime adjustments this past week. So that was a good thing to see from the Titans defense. They're struggling a little bit defensively, made some adjustments. And right now, they're completely in the mix.
And keep in mind, we have seen money from the professional bettors coming on the Titans each of the last couple of weeks. That number against Jacksonville got steamed up. We saw the Titans ultimately close as one-point favorites yesterday, despite an opening number where they were three-and-a-half-point dogs. So be interesting to see where the Oakland Raiders money starts to enter the market. But as far as games are concerned, we do have one big game to get to. Before we get there, though, it's all about the injury analysis.
Are you injured or are you hurt?
When injuries occur in the NFL, there's only one man to turn to.
If you're hurt, you can still play. If you're injured, you can't.
Let's check in with 17-year NFL team doctor turned medical analyst, Dr. David Chow.
So are you hurt or are you injured?
This is Chow's Corner.
He joins us every Monday on the Bet the Board podcast. You, of course, can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. He will be the single best source of injury information from now till the end of the regular season, through the postseason, and maybe more importantly for a lot of you season-long fantasy players out there looking to get that final edge. It is always makes for an interesting football weekend, and unfortunately, with the more games being played, the unfortunate reality is we see injuries to key contributors, and while pain is all about glitz and glamour, as everybody who listens to this podcast understands, there is the defensive side of the ball that we can't neglect, and wanted to get your take on what unfolded in Denver, specifically with Von Miller, who was out on the field before the game. No one really knew if he was going to be available to go, and you were one of the first guys to kind of break that story, saying, hey, look, Von doesn't look like he's going to be able to play against the Chargers yesterday.
Well, you know, thanks for having seen that, but I know the Greek very well, a longtime head athletic trainer. I know the doctors very well in Denver, but if I called them, they wouldn't tell me. I mean, it's HIPAA and it's privacy. As a matter of fact, they would be insulted. So when Nikki DeBlava, the athletic, put up a series of videos pregame of him working out on the field, Von Miller just didn't look right. I mean, to the average human being, comparing him to the average human, he looked great, but that didn't look like Von Miller. He couldn't get off with his left leg. He was favoring it. And that's why I was like, I don't think he's anywhere close to 100%. I didn't think he would play. And if he did, it would be a non-factor. He'd be ineffective anyway. And it turns out he was inactive. But as far as going forward, when can he play? I never saw original injury of the video of the injury, and I don't know exactly anatomically what his issue is. I know he's wearing a brace on the left side. And because of that, it makes it harder for me to predict when he'll return. I can tell you by looking at the video from Sunday morning that he's got to have a pretty good week to make it next week. It wasn't like it was a borderline coin flip call for me on whether he would play this Sunday versus the Chargers, which means he's got to have a pretty good recovery week to make it.
And of course, Denver has a massive game coming up against the Houston Texans, more impactful for Houston than it will be for Denver, who kind of plays out the string. One other defensive injury, Dr. Chow, before I turn it over to Payne. Derwin James finally activated by the Los Angeles Chargers yesterday. Didn't have a chance to watch that game in its entirety, but did you see anything there from his performance, or how do you see the Chargers go about integrating him back into the defensive fold, knowing for all intents and purposes, they are outside looking into the AFC playoff picture?
Well, I think that's why they actually played him a good number of snaps. They knew they really needed him, and this was a key game. And, you know, he only had a week of practice from that foot injury to low extremity. Usually you go at least two or three before you see some good action. And he did all right. He looked okay. You know, from the get-go, from the preseason when this happened, I said, don't look for him until December. He's been no way he's playing until December. And so that's one of those I sort of just eked out at since he played December 1st.
Dr. Chow, I'm going to ask you about the offensive side of the ball because that's where the fantasy players make their money.
Oh, here we go. Here we go.
We saw
except on the defensive side of the ball, you know, and we talked about it a little bit at profootballdoc.com with Dontari Podown. And then when Gerald McCoy got injured, you saw what Darius Geis and Adrian Peterson were able to do on the ground against the Panthers. So there is some defensive relation.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that. Keeping in the same division as the Panthers, the Atlanta Falcons and Julio Jones did not play on the short Thursday game. Coach said that he wanted to gut it out, but wasn't going to play him if he was 100%. Do we expect Julio Jones back this coming week or even this season if he's got an ailing injury now that Atlanta's all but eliminated?
Well, if Dan Quinn is sticking to his word of not playing Julio Jones until he's 100%, it probably will be late December before he can go. And then by that time, will they even play him? If Atlanta was playing meaningful games, I'm quite sure Julio Jones would go. Deebo Samuel played well yesterday, and it's his third week of playing through an AC joint sprain with the 49ers. It's something that can be done, but unpredictable because it's not based solely on the medicine and the injury in terms of what he has. It's based on the politics of the situation of the team and the attitude of management and or head coach, not just the injury itself. So that's why I think it's iffy to play.
Another receiver I want to talk to you about, T.Y. Hilton, did return short week for the Texans game, but missed this week's game against the Titans. What do we expect there from him?
I think medically he probably needs another week, but then again, Colts kind of have their backs to the wall, so they might need him.
And what are we hearing on Amari Cooper? Certainly a big hit late when the game was decided, gets hit on the knee, flips, everyone holds their breath. He did return a little bit, but do you see anything there with the knee?
It was actually right in the middle of Thanksgiving, and just that time, and I got up and got the side eye from the wife. But as spectacular as it looked, my two sources there were my right eye and my left eye, and I suppose my brain too, didn't see a whole lot of anything. A spectacular flip. He got hit just above the knee. It's more of a distal thigh contusion. Those actually don't hurt that much because it's not a lot of muscle there. It's more tendon, so less bleeding. And MRI is already negative. I don't see anything for this Thursday game. I think he's going to be fine. If anything, any residual knee or ankle from the last few weeks might be the bigger issue than this blow, although the blow looked fantastic. I don't have particular worry on him this week.
Good news there for Amari Cooper. Two more I want to ask you about, same team, before I toss it back to Todd. The Pittsburgh Steelers are somehow continuing to win games. They're 7-5. They got a good game coming up against Arizona where they are a small favorite. What does it look like in terms of Juju Smith-Schuster and James Conner?
Yeah, it's pretty amazing if you think about it. They were without their number one quarterback, running back, and wide receiver and still won against the Browns. So that's pretty amazing there. James Conner, I think, is finally likely to play, but not guaranteed to play. He's been worried about that AC joint getting worse. And I'm not begrudging him. It seems like he hasn't wanted to take the injection to play for his own reasons. Maybe there are medical reasons as well that we don't know about. but this is a week that I would expect that he could come back. He's on the upside of 50-50, whereas Juju, I think, is still on the downside.
And lastly, Dr. Chow, a big injury that will impact tonight's game that we've yet to break down the podcast between Minnesota and Seattle. Adam Thielen ruled out, didn't actually travel with the team to the Pacific Northwest, and it seems as though this hamstring injury he's been dealing with has lingered. You've talked about it at great lengths, that soft tissue issues, everyone recovers in their own unique time period. What do you make of Thielen, and how long? Is this more precautionary that the Vikings want to bring him back at 100%, or should there be reason to be concerned about his availability coming up down the final 4 or 5 weeks of the regular season?
I think he's going to be available coming up the 4 or 5 weeks, and this is why they're being careful with him here. First of all, early week, all signs were good, and then kind of a day or two later, apparently there was some sort of setback, and he was down, and then he was back up again. A little bit of a roller coaster this week for Adam Thielen in terms of the practice reports related to his hamstring. And that's actually why early on, when there was optimism that he would play late in the week, that look, he's back to full, I'm like, I'm not so sure. They did this once before already. They brought him back early for that one game a few weeks ago. I forget who was against, and he only had a couple of targets. He exited, made a very early first quarter exit, re-aggravating the thing, has missed several weeks since. At this point in time, if you were the GM or the coach and you said, look, let's wait another week and decrease the chance of re-aggravation, or let's force the issue this week, roll the dice where he might end up missing 4 weeks in the rest of the season, regular season at least, what is your choice? I think that's why they're saying, let's not play you against Seattle. And quite honestly, knowing Thielen, the reason why they kept him at his home is they didn't want him chirping in everyone's ear saying, we're going to try and make it once he's out there in Seattle for the Monday night game, which probably is his nature. That's probably why I said, well, let's just make the call and leave him at home so we don't have to worry about it.
Sometimes you have to protect these players from themselves, and I'm sure Vikings fans would love to see one of their more talented offensive playmakers out there full go and healthy, knowing that the stretch upcoming will help decide not only where they might fall in the wild card push, but an outside chance to knock the Green Bay Packers from their perch atop the NFC North. You can follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. As we've said countless times, he is the single best source for injury information, both for sports bettors and fantasy players alike. Real time before the games, make sure you're consulting his Twitter feed before you make those last minute decisions at the wagering window. Dr. Chow, can't thank you enough as always for your time. I'll look forward to getting you back into the fold next week, same time.
Absolutely. And we had a new feature launching this week. It's actually soft launched and up, is that since it is fantasy playoffs, that you can go on to profootball.com for free and actually enter in any number of your fantasy teams, and that will send you alerts, and you can go to one page and see all the players and their injury statuses that you actually care the most about right there and then in front of you, instead of searching out each individual player.
Payne, I might have to use that if I ever thought Matt Breida was going to be out there taking carries for the 49ers before the end of the regular season.
Mostert was the man this week.
He definitely went out there and did some damage. But that's a great feature, Dr. Chow, and hopefully all of our loyal Bet the Board listeners will take advantage. We expect all of them out there to be contending for fantasy championships. We don't deal with those last place bets around here. We've educated our loyal listeners a heck of a lot better.
Sounds good.
Interesting stuff, Payne, on Adam Thielen. You figure, obviously, the Vikings would love to have him out there for a marquee game tonight, and I feel it's a perfect area to try and take us as we look at the game between Seattle and Minnesota. Big game breakdown brought to you courtesy of FoxBet. The hottest name in sports is now the hottest name in sports betting. Download the app from anywhere, available for real money wagering in New Jersey and Pennsylvania. And we look at this game, Payne, this number has hovered between a Seattle 2.5 juiced to a 3 juice the other way for the Vikings, total 49.5 at FoxBet. And when we try and identify some of the key matchups here, I mean, I have a laundry list of Russell Wilson and his proficiency in prime time, but I'm not sure we want to get to that. That's the low-hanging fruit. What are some of the matchups you're going to be looking for in tonight's game?
So let's first talk about the numbers, right? Let's go with that first, because I think it's probably important. And that's where a lot of people are going to struggle with this game mentally, is when you just look at the number being offered. What does it mean? What's taking place? To me, you know, when you think about the value of the numbers we're dealing with now, right, coming off that 3, this line would technically indicate you would make Minnesota minus 2.5 on a neutral without the aforementioned Adam Thielen, right? to arrive at where we currently sit with Seattle minus 2.5 in their home building, right? You're going to give probably close to 4 here for an home field advantage, especially with some of those numbers that I'm sure you'll list off with Russell Wilson in primetime and at home. I'm pretty high on the Vikings, but if you look, they have not beaten a team with a winning record all season. Tonight would be the first. Their 8 wins right now come against teams with a combined record of 32-63-1, right? That said, plus 3 on Minnesota is very sharp. It is starting to drift back a little bit once Thielen was announced out. The public is on Seattle. It could eventually get back to a normal 3. But I think what's really interesting here is, and I don't have a penny on this game yet, but the Vikings side was liked so much, Todd, and you can attest to this, that once the line did drop to 2.5, the same groups who sent it to 2.5 from the 3 decided that, hey, we're going to add more by keying the Vikings in our teasers as well. So this is a very, very strong position on the Vikings. I don't know, obviously, the outcome of this game. I don't know where it's going to close. But that is the side before we kind of dig into some of these matchups.
Well, one of the things, as far as trends, you're going to have to buck. We may as well get there with Russell Wilson. Yeah. You look at him in primetime games in his career, 24-5-1 straight up, 21-7-2 against the spread, touchdown interception ratio, 57-15, a passer rating of 105. And those numbers paying get that much better when he's playing at home, 15-2 straight up, 12-4-1 against the spread, and a 36-9 touchdown interception ratio with a passer rating of 109. But what I think is interesting about this game, and you try and figure things out, we've talked about the Vikings really struggling in the secondary, not being an elite stop unit in the back like we've grown accustomed to. Every week we see Seattle now, you should be led to believe that this receiving core is going to get better. They're going to be on the same page, and they're going to have a three-headed monster if Tyler Lockett is close to 100%, opposite Josh Gordon and rookie DK Metcalf.
Huge test for the Minnesota defense, right? And I think these are the kinds of games we're going to find out what Minnesota truly is made of, right? I think we're going to know pretty quickly if they're elite again, right, during this little Super Bowl push that they're trying to make, or if they're overrated and kind of living off past reputation in the Zimmer brand. All things factored and accounted for, it doesn't look bad on the defensive side for Minnesota, right? 10th in defensive efficiency. They face an above average schedule of offenses. The difference is tonight, and to your point, they're facing an elite offense with a killer quarterback in Russell Wilson. And, you know, we've kind of pressed on this like Russ thing all season, how he's so clutch and how he improves as game goes on. And he's probably worth $100 million a year to this organization. But what's really interesting to kind of piggyback off some of your numbers, I was looking at some of these metrics as the games move towards the important part of the season, right? We know he's got the clutch factor in endgame situations, but I was looking at this. There's 110 quarterbacks in NFL history that have thrown at least 600 passes in the month of December. Russell Wilson has the highest passer rating in the month of December of any quarterback in history that's thrown over 600 passes. So his game really ticks up as they become more important. If you also look at how the Vikings perform defensively when they step up in competition, they haven't been that great. They've faced 5 offenses this season right now that are ranked top 9 in passing efficiency in those 5 games. And I know you've kind of pointed this out, and we saw it in full force against Dallas on Sunday Night Football, even though they came away with the win, but Dallas passed all over the park. In the 5 games against those top 9 passing offenses, Zimmer's defense allowed 51% of passes to grade successful. League average is about 45% for some context, right? Same 5 games, Minnesota's given up 21 explosive passes, and now you get the most efficient passing offense in the entire NFL. To your point, they're now implementing Josh Gordon. He's only been in the mix for about 2 games. He's going to be more acclimated to this offense. It's a balanced Seattle attack as well, right? Like, I know Brian Schottenheimer has made these drastic strides in how he calls games. The right people have gotten into his ear, and that's paid dividends for the offense. But even like when Shotty decides to hand it off to Carson and Penny, the Vikings defense has been vulnerable against the run as well. I know they did a fantastic job slowing Zeke, and they do a very good job of limiting big explosive runs, but down to down, Minnesota struggled stopping the run. They're 24th in rushing success rate defense, Todd, And when you look at the trending metrics, which we talk about so much this time of year, since week seven, 55% of runs have graded successful against the Vikings. They've allowed 4.5 yards a carry. So if Seattle's balanced here, this is just going to be a difficult, difficult task for them tonight.
When we look on the other side, Kirk Cousins draws a ton of criticism for his failure to perform to the high levels and the bar that Russell Wilson has set, especially in prime time. These two, a very interesting story, familiar with one another, actually friends off the field from their time at Wisconsin and Michigan State, played some big games against one another. The Vikings pain since their 21-7 loss last year in Seattle in the 14 games since, they've averaged more than 26 points per game, and Cousins has a 113 passer rating. But we've seen the Seattle secondary, which was a major concern, get a lot better with Kadri Diggs. Clowney and Jaron Reed should be out there, but I know Seattle dealing with a little bit of an illness, so to speak, that could impact some of their key contributors defensively.
Yes, that is true. And that's partly why this game's moved a little bit. But I also think the vibe of this Minnesota offense is a lot better. And again, there's a lot of professional bettors that are extremely high in this team. And, you know, you have to like everything that you've seen so far, right? Like with Gary Kubiak coming in and overseeing this offense, he's put his touches on it, right? It's helped Stefanski. It's helped Kirk Cousins out big time. It actually feels when you watch these games that there's an actual game plan, right? There's an actual system. Like one play is being called to set up another or complement another. You know what I mean? And so when I look at this relationship between those three guys, it's been a home run so far. There's been improvements in every area, right? Whether you're implementing this new zone running scheme because you have this dynamic one cut back in Delvin Cook, plus it makes things easier on your O-line. And that's an O-line that's had some questionable parts. If you look, the change in that blocking technique, it's been huge. Right now, Minnesota's 7th in adjusted line yards. They were 23rd last season. And then when you think about what that zone running scheme means, what can you do off it, right? There's a lot of these stretch plays called, which then sets up play action even more. Through 12 weeks, Cousins is passing with a play fake element 33% of the time. Last season, 20%. So we've seen a drastic shift as well in how they choose to throw the ball with Cousins, which has really helped. And if you just like polled Minnesota fans, you're like, hey, Adam Thielen's going to miss like a large portion of this season. Would you actually believe your offense improves year over year? I think they'd all laugh, right? But right now you're looking at Minnesota 5th in overall efficiency. They're balanced, top 10 in both rushing and passing efficiency. The only qualm I guess you would have is the competition faced, right? Cousins in that offense right now face the 5th easiest schedule of defenses so far. Not that that's going to be like a drastic jump up, but Seattle's defense is trending in the right direction. A couple of the matchups that I think are worth mentioning, and you kind of, I believe, mentioned him, was Jaron Reed. He's going to play here. Big interior lineman who was suspended for the first 6 weeks of the season. And knowing Minnesota likes to run the ball at the third highest rate in the NFL, I think having him in there is big tonight. If you look at games that he's played, Seattle's allowing about 44% of runs to grade successful. That's better than league average. In the games he's missed, Seattle's allowed 48% of runs to grade positive. That's below average. Now, I know that gap doesn't seem overly large, but it's the difference from being well above average to well below average. The other critical factor here is I think Seattle needs to figure out how to get pressure on Kirk Cousins, right? They're not doing that overall this season, about a 19% pressure rate. It's the 6th lowest in the league. Clowney is dealing with what they've relabeled a core injury. Probably should ask Dr. Chow about that. Completely slipped my mind. But it concerns me that they've relabeled this thing from this injury to this one. Now it's a core injury. Let's see how he looks tonight. But again, like Seattle has to figure out a way to make Cousins uncomfortable. If you look at Cousins' last 5 seasons, right, when he's only been a full-time starter, 26 of his 49 picks have come when he's under pressure. So that's got to be the goal. Make him overthink, force him into bad decisions. It's already an environment, right, that makes it tough on offensive linemen to communicate. You'd think maybe if they aren't able to get pressure with 4, Ken Norton Jr. probably dials up the blitz a little bit. They send the blitz right now at about a 30% clip, 11th most in the NFL. So if Clowney can't go, or if he's not 100% rather, I think we'll see more aggressiveness in the game plan from Ken Norton Jr. Last thing that I never thought I would actually think is a crucial mashup, but it is, just based on how these teams are trending, how the offense is changing a little bit for the Vikings. Seattle doesn't defend the tight end overly well, right? And we know Minnesota loves two tight end sets. Even with Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright, Seattle's given up 70 receptions to tight ends. That's third most in the league, despite only playing 11 games so far. Fifth most receiving yards allowed to tight ends. If you look, since Adam Thielen's been down, the beneficiary of that has been Kyle Rudolph. He has been a much larger part of the Vikings offense. First six games this season, when Thielen was 100% healthy, Rudolph only averaged about 1.8 targets per game. Since week seven, that number is now 4.8 targets per game. He's got five touchdowns over the last five games. Let's see if Rudolph and Irv Smith Jr. become factors tonight. It's something to watch for.
Feed the big fella his due there. One last thing, Payton, you talked about the number and what we've seen there. Have you seen anything as far as the totals concerned? Hasn't been a whole lot of movement. 49 kind of where it opened. Looks like a slow leak up. We know in some of these standalone games, overs have gone to die this season. But at the same time, a relatively high total for two teams that have been a little bit more dynamic offensively than people might be led to believe.
That's the trickiness in this, because we're talking about Seattle now passing more, being extremely efficient through the air. Minnesota's defense regressing a little bit. Minnesota being better through the air with Kirk Cousins. All signs would point to, right, old school thought and view would be under. This total has come up off the 48.5. We're now out as high as 50.5. No major key numbers in that area, but I'm intrigued to see if there will be a push right before kick on this under. But where the dramatic shift came from, right? It wasn't necessarily in the full game, but the algorithm, the model, right? Once it triggered 49.5, we now saw 24 start to enter the market in the first half. And that is a key number. So it'll be interesting to see if that lasts or if over is the final position. But I don't necessarily, I haven't seen anything at this point. So intrigued to see where the total goes.
Should be one hell of a game. We've been dealt some Monday Night Football duds. Let's hope this one is competitive from start to finish, as both these teams very much relevant in the NFC playoff picture, both vying for division titles in their own respective divisions. A lot of stuff, a lot of ground to cover, Payne, right out of the holidays. Don't feel like we missed a beat. Always want to thank Dr. Chow for his time. You can, of course, follow Dr. David Chow on Twitter at ProFootballDoc. You can follow Payne there at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman. And most importantly, follow the podcast at BetTheBoardPod. Anything else, Payne, that you would like to share with our loyal listeners before we bend them a fond farewell and I take enough Theraflu to kill a small village?
No, that's it. Get some rest. We'll be back on Wednesday for the college football podcast, championship games, and then again on Thursday for NFL. Full week back in effect.
No doubt about it. A couple weeks left on the grind as we get ever so close to crowning a new Super Bowl champion and a national champion in college football. Special thanks to all of you, our loyal listeners, who have been with us on this ride since week one. Continue to provide you with the best information we can from now until the end of the season. And no matter which way you elect to go, Monday Night Football between the Seahawks and Vikings, hopefully we'll see you at the win.